It's a fascinating topic, and I've enjoyed the conversation. Professor John Rennie Short, thanks so much for joining me on SeaChange Radio.
My great pleasure. Thank you, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to SeaChange Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Jimmy McGriff, James Taylor, and J.J. Kale. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to SeaChange Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For SeaChange Radio, I'm Alex Wise.
And on, and on, and on. For example, Kenmore, the home appliance maker, offers a select line of washers and dryers that talk. Not to us owners. No, no, we're too stupid. Rather, the machines talk directly to service agents back at Kenmore Central, wherever in the spinning cosmos that might be located. Just dial up a service repair number and a faraway corporate facilitator will listen to your machine, explain its problems, then make a diagnosis to get the appliance back in sync. Am I alone in being suspicious about this? How long before the machines do their own dialing, perhaps even calling other washer dryers in your area to form insurgent pods? Seriously, do you really know what capabilities the corporate powers have quietly tucked into your home appliances? You can try reading your owner's manual, but those things are too dense to decipher, unless you're a computer. For all you know, your laundry room, which appears so pedantic and one-dimensional, could be listening to you, secretly recording and reporting your daily patterns, thought processes, and comings and goings. And don't think for a moment that the washer-dryer combos are in this by themselves. Co-conspirators abound. Your self-starting coffee maker, your smart refrigerator, that iPod in your ear, and your do-it-all cell phone. Oh my God, they're not called cell phones for nothing, are they? This is Jim Hightower saying, admit it. We the people really know nothing about the techno-gizmos that outnumber us and completely surround us. What if they choose to rise up en masse? They could bring our whole civilization down in a nanosecond. I'm surprised that the right-wing blogosphere hasn't already sounded the alarms about this as a liberal plot masterminded by Obama and his cadre of Islamic techno-communist fascists.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Bruce Jenkins Insurance and Financial Services. Bruce specializes in life and health insurance, long-term care, and annuities. For answers to your questions about Medicare, Covered California, and state-mandated required health insurance, you can call Bruce Jenkins at 530-781-3592 or visit brucejenkinsinsurance.com. This is KZFR 90.1, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 here on KZFR 90.1 FM or online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm your host, Jeannie Trezino. My co-host, Robert Jones, is traveling for the next couple of weeks, so my co-host today is Sue Hildebrand, longtime host of The Real Issue, which comes up next. She's been an amazing mentor and coach for us here at Nonhuman Radio, and we're so grateful. Thank you so much for filling in for Robert, Sue. Tonight on Nonhuman Radio, we'll learn about what could really happen if the world went vegan, what the big deal is with vegan butcher shops in Europe and the United States, and what's up with cage-free eggs, plus our weekly calendar of events and a book review. But first, it's time for the latest animal rights and vegan news. If every person on Earth adopted a vegan diet, greenhouse gas emissions associated with food production would fall by more than half compared to 2005 levels. That's one of several striking findings from a food and climate study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science last month. Conservation magazine, which is definitely not a vegan or animal rights magazine, reported that the food we eat is responsible for over one quarter of global greenhouse gas emissions, and, of course, a big chunk of those emissions come from cows. Researchers found that the vegan diet scenario, in which the entire world population goes vegan, puts the planet on track to reduce global greenhouse gas emissions enough to keep global warming to 2 degrees Celsius by 2050. 2 degrees Celsius, in case you don't know, is about 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit, and if we can not get that warm, it would be great for farmers and cities on the coast and all of us. The researchers also calculated that the global economy would experience massive healthcare savings from improved health globally because vegetarian and vegan diets are proven associated with lower rates of heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, and cancer, all those chronic illnesses that accumulate over a lifetime of bad eating.
You know, Jeannie, it's interesting to me as you talk about if the global population went vegan, we could solve so many of our problems. And it seems like such a sort of innocuous behavioral change. You know, I remember when we used to, right in the beginning when we first started recycling, and people would say, well, what difference does it make if I recycle my cans? You know, who cares? I'm the only one doing it. But now everybody does it. And it's that change of behavior.
Absolutely. Cultural shifts. And, you know, some communities, some whole countries and cultures don't need to shift already because they're primarily vegetarian-based. You know, large populations in India, of course. The diets in a lot of the countries that are rising up economically right now, like China, traditionally didn't have access to much meat, eggs, or dairy. And so now the tricky point is, and that's what these researchers are trying to point out, is not only our massively meat and animal product-based diets in the United States, if those types of diet patterns are adopted in other countries, and they are being adopted in other countries, to take a look at the health impacts, the cost for health and caring for these people, as well as the climate impacts.
And it's a sign of status to be able to eat meat on a regular basis. You know, I spend time in Morocco and once a year, in the calendar year, in the lunar year, every man slaughters a sheep, and it's a celebration where you get to eat meat. And for a lot of people, it's the only time of the year where you get to eat meat. And now it's this status symbol of I eat meat every day.
Yep. It's definitely what I've read in terms of like market surveys of different economies around the world. Yeah, it's unfortunate. And I just want to say that one of the mantras of vegan activists is that we want a vegan world and not just a vegan club, because we do have a tendency to be, you know, sort of an isolated social group, because sometimes our diet kind of isolates us. Our and it's not just dietary choices, it's a lifestyle choice. But so it's really nice to see, to kind of envision for a moment, like the impacts that would benefit everyone if we went vegan.
Right.
So in a related story, I want to point out there was a shop in the Netherlands. Paul Boom of the Netherlands-based vegetarian butcher shop announced that the renowned restaurateur Ferian Adria was convinced he was working with real chicken thighs after sampling the vegetarian butcher shop's veggie chicken. Ferran Adria is evidently a very famous restaurateur. He's opened some very high-end, fancy-schmancy restaurants in Spain. The vegetarian butcher shop founder, Paul Boehm, said, and I quote, "We want to take vegetarian food out of the green corner and make it gourmet," which I say hallelujah. The Dutch-based meat-free factory creates smoked bacon, chicken shawarma, shrimp, and ground beef from from soybeans, other legumes, grains, and vegetables. So completely plant-based, and that sounds great to me. And elsewhere in the world, we're learning of a growing number of successful plant-based butcher shops, such as Susie's Spoons Vegetarian Butcher in Australia, a place called Yam Chops in Toronto, and a very popular shop called The Herbivorous Butcher in Minneapolis. And even on our on the West Coast here, we have The Butcher's Son in Berkeley, which is supposed to be amazing. Robert Jones mentioned that he got a lunch there, I think a Reuben. That was pretty good, the other on one of the previous shows.
Well, let me ask you, Jeannie, about, I don't know, 15 or 20 years ago, my partner and I were in Joshua Tree National Park, and we were there for Thanksgiving, and so we brought one of those tofurkey Thanksgiving meals with us.
Oh.
And it was not very good at all. But this is a long time ago, and so I'm a little surprised when it says that when you talk about the restaurateur thought he was dealing with real meat. So tell me, I haven't tried tofurkey in a very long time. Uh-huh. So how has it changed?
So tofurkey is in a class by itself. It can taste better or worse, I'll be honest, depending on how you cook it. Definitely, if you just bake it in the oven, I find it's, personally, I don't enjoy it that way. I like to cook it in a slow cooker with a lot of moisture. And then throw in just some onions and celery and carrots in there and then cook it in a slow cooker. And they reformulated it slightly in the last couple of years. So it probably tastes different even if you don't prepare it any differently. But these butcher shop meats, these are a different class. They're really just trying to replicate animal products. So texture and taste and appearance, all hitting on all those cylinders to make a very satisfying meal. And by and large, there are not enough vegans to keep these shops in business.
Right.
They are not staying in business. They are not being successful just feeding vegans. What they're being successful at is feeding lots of people who are meat eaters, but they're like, hey, maybe I should reduce because maybe it will help my health. Maybe it'll be a little easier on the planet if I skip eating quite so much meat or dairy or eggs.
And you know, and it's interesting to me because it seems like a bait and switch where here's this meat. Why do we try so hard to make non-meat taste like meat? And it goes back to that cultural convenience or what we're used to. You know what I mean? It's like, I want my meat, even if it's not meat. So we have to sort of take taste like meat. It's so peculiar to me. This country is so dedicated to eating flesh, eating meat, that we pretend that we're eating meat.
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with liking to bite into something and chewing on it. You know, there are some schools of thought, and some groups are like, oh no, that is just awful to replicate something that's a living animal. It just turns me off. And I understand it. But on the other hand, you know, it's a sandwich is a lovely device to consume some carbs and proteins and some fats all in one package.
Right.
And so I'm all for it.
Right.
And it's interesting because these are replicating butcher shops. They are, not only are they replicating like the food on people's plates, but they're replicating the environment in which people purchase this food.
And they're wearing the big white coats and everything.
The pictures I've seen is from the Herbivorous Butcher. Yes, they're trying to replicate that experience where, like, you walk up and there's these big glass front cases with the assortments of meats, and they slice it up for you and wrap it up in paper, and you take it away.
That's great.
And you know, the less change people have to endure, the better. So I'm all for that.
Right.
So anyway, and then, in case you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio. I'm here with Sue Hildebrand. We're here on KZFR 90.1 FM Chico and worldwide at KZFR.org. My next news story, the last one, will be on cage-free eggs. I don't know if you've been following it on the vegan news circuit. I have been seeing lots of announcements. But there's been a trend in the last year or so for major fast food chains pledging to obtain eggs from sources without battery cages, which is a confinement system for producing eggs. The new egg suppliers for these big fast food chains pledged to use cage-free systems instead of intense confinement. Intense confinement is nine hens in a cage of less than 100 square inches, right? Walmart just announced that it will obtain all of its eggs from cage-free sources, and that's in collaboration with the Humane Society of the United States. Walmart, which is the world's biggest retailer and biggest food seller in the U.S., this is an excellent development. Wendy's has pledged going cage-free by 2020. These are long timelines because they have to change. Many companies have to change the way they house their hens. McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts will transition by 2025. Denny's, like how more mainstream can you get than Denny's? Denny's will change by 2026. Trader Joe's and Costco have also pledged to go cage-free. So that's nice to have like the grocery store type outlet to purchase this. So what is cage-free? Cage-free systems basically convert battery cages, which are rows and tiers of hens confined, maybe up to nine hens in a single enclosure. It converts these into what are called indoor housing systems. These are giant barns where you have hens, depending on how much money, how much capital the producer has to be able to convert. They have to pull out all the old cages. They have to sustain a loss, like no revenue for a mountain of time while they transition. And then in the meanwhile, they have to purchase all this new equipment and install it. So whatever the system, cage-free does not mean free range. It does not mean open pasture. It's still an indoor system for these hens to live their lives, which is only about a year and a half before they lose. They don't produce enough eggs to be able to make it profitable to keep feeding them.
Well, Jeannie, why? I'm curious about why you're promoting this kind of news as a good thing. The lives of the chicken are so not very enlightening. And also, you're encouraging people to eat a certain kind of egg.
That's true. I mean, I think, though, anytime we can have these producers acknowledge that they need to respond to consumer demand and consumer education, the better. One thing that happens when these systems convert to these cage-free systems is it costs more per egg. I think any time the consumer has to pay more per egg, the better, because the less they're going to consume.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're a manufacturer that uses eggs to make cookies or cereal or whatever you're going to use your eggs in, cake mix, it's going to cost you a little more. You're going to have to pass that on, which then the plant-based alternative is going to be a little cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, these the animal welfare organizations that are promoting these campaigns, these are not their end goal. And I'm sure that the agriculture industry is aware of that, too, and they like to...
Oh, that slippery slope.
Yes, exactly. But change is in the air, and the only way this change happens is when these big chains force their producers to change their systems. So that's why I'm for it, in that it's a sense of change. I just want to share one quote, just talking about how awful these, quote, cage-free systems are. One egg producer who pasture raises his hens, he says, "It's better than caged, no doubt. I'd rather be in the mosh pit at the front of the biggest concert in history rather than squeezed in an elevator with 15 people for my entire life." So I think that's like an image that folks can really relate to, right? Neither one is ideal, but it's better to be in the mosh pit than...
I've been in a mosh pit. It's not a lot of fun. I mean, anyway, but you're right. The elevator doesn't sound very inviting either.
So anyway, so that's... we'll keep an eye on that story. It keeps coming up. We haven't heard the end of that.
Good. I hope so.
Okay.
I hope so. That's a good one to keep following.
Ready for something new?
Let's do it.
Okay. Next I have the... usually I have a restaurant pick or a food pick, but instead this time I want to share something that is really making me stupidly happy. It's a new vegan... Well, because I don't have kids, so it's like, why should I be so excited? It's a new vegan cookbook for kids by the artist and author Ruby Roth. The book is titled The Help Yourself Cookbook for Kids, 60 Easy Plant-Based Recipes Kids Can Make to Stay Healthy and Save the Earth. And Ruby Roth is the illustrator and author of this book, and she's produced a number of other books for kids. One is titled V is for Vegan, The ABCs of Being Kind. Another book called That's Why We Don't Eat Animals. Mm. And the last one is Vegan is Love, Having Heart and Taking Action. They all appeal to the compassion that kids have naturally and nurture that. So three reasons why I like this book. One, because even though the book says plant-based on the cover, it uses the language of veganism on the inside, and it doesn't shy away from that. Vegan is a very good word to describe not just what's on your plate, but all the actions that you have. So I like that. Second, it doesn't talk down to kids. I feel the language explains really clearly, but in kids' terms, what a vegan diet is, how it's good for animals, how it's good for the environment, and how it's good for your personal health. Again, and mostly in terms of kindness. And so if you're a vegan parent, I think you'll appreciate having your views echoed in this cookbook. And if you're not vegan, but your kid is, which I think happens a lot, I think just like a lot of social change, the kids can drive the parents to make change. So that's great. This book is a great way to both understand how and what to feed your kid, or the scenario where, like, your kid's best friend is vegan and you don't want to make them feel ostracized or not part of the group. So, anyway. So, yeah. And the last reason why I like this book is that this book is really pretty. It's really beautifully designed.
It's beautiful.
And I think that even if you don't, if your kid doesn't cook from it, you could actually probably sit the kid down. Especially if they're a reader, if they're able to read, and they would just read the instructions and kind of be engaged by it.
Oh, it's a wonderful book. It's colorful. It's got big goofy letters. It's a beautiful book. And as I was flipping through it, it has a recipe for pretend tuna salad. And I love tuna fish. I don't eat it very often. I really don't.
Well, you shouldn't, because tuna stocks are declining.
I know. I don't eat it very often because tuna stocks are declining. Also, the mercury in tuna. I mean, I love tuna fish, and I probably eat it about once a year. I kid you not.
Yeah.
And I just love tuna fish, and I consciously choose not to eat it. And every once in a while, I'm weak, and I do it anyway. But it's wonderful here. Pretend tuna salad, and it's the picture is beautiful, and it's made with tempeh. And I thought that's a one. I have tempeh in my refrigerator right now. I love tempeh, so it's a wonderful recipe. I think I might try that and get rid of that tuna fish in my cabinet.
There you go. And you know, and here again is like, this is replicating an animal-based meal. So it has that comfort level, not only for the kid, but for the parents and the kid's friends. You know, it's not so weird. So anyway.
And it's so healthy looking. I don't see anything in all of these recipes that none of it calls for any kind of real fat or sugar. I mean, what a healthy, beautiful book. It's lovely.
I think the best thing you could, I'm not a parent, but my opinion is that the best thing you can do for your kid is to start them off eating healthy so that they don't get hooked on sugary stuff or a lot of processed stuff. If you can develop a desire, if your kid's comfort food is pretend tuna salad, you have gone a long way to making helping your kid be healthy for a lifetime,
and to really change the global environment,
and that too,
right?
And
it takes one meal at a time.
All right. Well, I think we have just a little bit of time left. I'm going to just go through a couple of events for animal for the area, and then we'll wrap it up. So I'll be posting all the information from this show on our website at nonhumanradio.com, including links to these events and links to these news stories that we were just talking about.
And what's that link?
Nonhumanradio.com.
Okay.
Volunteers are still needed at Animal Places Rescue Ranch in Vacaville to help with caring for 1,300 layer hens who were rescued from a large egg farm in Southern California. Volunteers are needed to perform health checks, declumping, and barn cleaning. And so please send an email to Jonathan Hussein at jonathan@animalplace.org.
What does it mean to declump a chicken?
I know, right? Declumping. So these birds are experiencing more room than they have ever had in their entire short lives, right? And these hens are about a year and a half old. When they are in cage systems, they tend to huddle together. There's no other enrichments. There's often not even any perches. Mm. These birds don't even know how to perch often when they come from these rescues. So declumping, when the hens start to go to bed at night, they tend to cluster together. And if they step on top of each other, they injure each other. And so they need to be moved away from each other gently.
This is the saddest world, being a chicken. It's a terrible life.
It is. It is. And so if there's any animal product that you feel willing to give up first, chicken is probably the best one. Eggs and chicken, because of just these animals never see the light of day. Mm-hmm. It's just an awful, awful life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have been a vegetarian and a meat eater. Most of my life, I've mostly been a vegetarian, you know, but there's definitely periods where I'm a meat eater. And my least... Well, my absolutely least favorite meat is duck. Ugh. But chicken, I cannot eat chicken. It's just too, I don't know what it is, too sweet or something. Oh. I'm just not a chicken.
I wouldn't know. I haven't had chicken in 25 years.
Good for you.
Okay. I think that we'll leave that. I think we're about out of time. Okay. Well,
I think we have a couple more minutes.
All right.
Yeah. Another announcement would be lovely.
Okay. The event, then, that I would like folks to attend, learn about and attend, is the Chico Vegan Potluck, which is coming up next Saturday, April 23rd at 6 p.m. We have one every month, and it's at the Chico Library Community Room. The theme for this month is kid-friendly foods, that is, foods that kids can make by themselves. So... foods that kids can make by themselves. So Ruby Roth's cookbook might be something to take a look at. I'll definitely bring it in so folks can look at it. So Chico Library, 6 o'clock, April 23rd. That theme is just a suggested one. Oh, and I just want to share, we had a first-time attendee come to our potluck last month, and I was, like, tickled because she said that if you didn't know it was a vegan potluck, you would not even guess that it was, because... The food was all delicious, and the people were all, like, normal. So I'm just really glad that we're, like, I think she was expecting hippies and sprouts and salad and...
I was going to say normal, but I thought, maybe that's offensive. But, yeah, I mean, I guess vegans are normal, huh?
I think we are. I don't think you'd be able to pick me out of a crowd in particular.
No, except when you're wearing that chicken outfit.
Well, yes, at the Brave the Cage, yes. So that is, I think that's about it. I want to thank Sue for filling in as my co-host this week. I really appreciate it. It's really fun being on air with you.
It is a pleasure.
And Robert Jones will be back in a few weeks by my side.
And Robert Jones is listening from O'Hare Airport right now, so a big shout out to Robert Jones.
Ah, that's what it is. Okay, great. Hi, Robert. I hope I'm doing you justice. Before I close the show, I want to share the animal rights subversive thought of the week, which comes from author Ruby Roth, which is, we all need a reality check in this country about who needs to be careful about the diet they're feeding to their children. So if you're feeding meat and dairy to your kids, you have to think about that as much as you may be concerned about feeding a vegan diet to your kids. So... All right.
And so, all right, let's do it.
Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are entirely those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, or its staff. Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against. If you missed a portion of the show, or you just want to listen again, or just have your friends and family listen, visit us online at nonhumanradio.com. And be sure to stay tuned for The Real Issue with Sue Hildebrand coming up next. So until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan.
Rock on.